We're holding on Kufyud Bey's Amud Bey's 17 lines from the bottom. Line begins with Hochsak. Continuing on different things where different Chachamim gave different pieces of advice or instructions to their Talmidim or their children. Shloshet Dvarim Sivir Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda as Rebbe. There are three things that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda commanded Rebbe. And again, we have the same issue as we did yesterday, that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda was a Talmud, or at best a chaver of Rebbe, and therefore, again, the Girsa is more likely Rav rather than Rebbe. Anyway, the instructions were, number one, Al Tetzi Yechidi Balayla, don't go out alone at night. Now, there are various places where the Gemara talks about this idea of not going out alone at night, and there are a few things. What we're going to focus on here in the Gemara is the problem that it exposes the person to danger from Mazikin. There are other places where the Gemara mentions another point also, which is Mepnei Hashad in Brachas. The Gemara mentions that also Mepnei Hashad, because people will suspect him that he's going out for improper purposes. So that one, at least, if he has a regular kviyas to learn at night, then it's allowed because people aren't going to suspect him of that, but otherwise you do have that consideration. But anyway, here we're focusing on the issue with shading. Number two, Val Talmud b'fnei aner orum, don't stand undressed in front of a candle. And number three, Val Tikonis l'merchatz chodosh, into a newly built bathhouse, shemati poches, because the floor might cave in. The bathhouses in the times of the Gemara were made in such a way they had a hollow underfloor that was held up with beams or pillars. You can find remnants of them in various places in Eretz Yisrael in archaeological digs. And then they would have in that hollow underfloor they would put wood. They'd have the hot air. From the furnaces, and they'd have the hot water, and then it would warm the floor from underneath, and then you'd stand on the overfloor. So now the overfloor could easily cave in, and then you find yourself literally in hot water as well as hot air. Ad kedekach, we learned in Brachas that when a person leaves a bathhouse, he should say a tefillah, or when he goes in, he should say a tefillah, asking Hashem to protect him, and when he goes out, he should say a tefillah, thanking Hashem for saving him from the fire and from the water. So therefore, so Rabbi Yosef, we heard they're saying, don't go into a new bathhouse because the floor might cave in and then you're going to be in danger. Now, let's go, Ad Kama, how long is it considered new? Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Ad Yud Beis Chodesh, up till 12 months. Once the bathhouse is 12 months old, then if it hasn't caved in all this time, then you don't have a problem. Now, let's focus on Val Talmud b'fnei aner orum, where we're going through them backwards. We said, don't stand in front of a candle undressed. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, ha'omid b'fnei aner orum, if a person stands undressed in front of a candle, have a nichbe, then he will become epileptic. Which, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions a concept that you shouldn't have children be undressed in front of the Shabbos candles, because not respectful, it's busy mitzvah. So there's a question then that, in that case, based on our Gemara, it seems that the danger is with any candles, with any lamps, not just the Shabbos ones. So there's a few different answers, one of them being that maybe over here we're only talking about if a person is fully undressed. There you're even talking about, let's say, for example, changing a baby's diaper. Whatever the case, there is this idea that it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that you shouldn't be undressed in front of the Shabbos candle, because it's not respectful, and you shouldn't allow children to be either. But here we're saying more generally that in front of candles, then there's a danger in it. And continues the Braisa, v'hamashamash tosev or aner, if a couple has relations by the light of a candle, having like banim nichbin, they're going to have children who are going to be epileptic. Now, b'chlal, there is a halacha, you're not supposed to have relations by candlelight anyway. The Gemara talks about that in other places. It's based on the idea, it's based on a couple of ideas, one of them being, you don't want to have that in the candlelight or daylight or whatever, the husband's going to notice some kind of flaw in his wife's body, and therefore he's going to not like her as much. Another reason is because of tznius in general, but whatever it is, now we're saying over here that even if all of those considerations didn't apply, there's also a physical danger involved. That the children who are born from such a union may end up being epileptic. Okay, so Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa in that connection, another thing involving relations that can lead to epileptic children. Hamashamash mitose amita shetinik yoshen aleha. If a couple has relations on the same bed where a baby is sleeping, oise tinik nichta, that child is going to end up being epileptic. But the Gemara qualifies it with a few things. V'loyamoran elo delay habi bar shata. That applies only if the child is under a year old. Aval habi bar shata less funda. If the child's a year old or more, then it doesn't matter. Then it's okay. V'loyamoran elo degoni lahabi kare. Also, the problem is only if the baby is sleeping near the feet of the bed. Aval goni lahabi reshe. But if the baby is sleeping at the top end of the bed, near the parents' heads, less one bar, then there's no problem. And even if the baby is under a year old and sleeping near your feet, there's only a problem if, while having relations, you don't put your hand on the baby. But if you place your hand on him doing that, less one bar, then there's no problem. So in short, the problem is only if the baby is under a year old by your feet and you don't have your hand on him. If there's any one of those things, then there's no problem with it. Why it is, it's something up in Kabbalah, apparently. Okay. Then the first piece of advice from Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda was, Al Teitzi Yechidi Balayla, don't go out alone at night. So why not? So aside from, we said before, the problem of Chashad, there's also here we're going to focus on the matter of Mazikim, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Lo Yetzi Yechidi Balayla, Loi Balayla Reviyas, Loi Balayla Shabbos. This person shouldn't go out alone on Tuesday nights or on Friday nights. Mepneshe Igras Bas Machlas, because Igras Bas Machlas, that's her name, she's the queen of the Shadim. The Marsha and the Chida and a couple of other Sfarim talk about a certain relationship that she may have, Beruchnius at least to Yishmael, one of whose daughters was named Machlas, and she ended up marrying Esav, so there's a certain relationship over there. Anyway, so she and 18,000 destructive malachim go out on those nights, on Tuesday night and on Friday night. Every one of those 18,000, or 18,001, including Igros Bas Machlas herself, have ability to harm Bifnei Atzmai all by themselves. So in other words, you have major dangers if you go out on those nights. So now, why dafka Tuesday and Friday nights? The Gemara says, "Me'ikra have a shchichi kula yoma." Originally, shadim used to be prevalent every night. Literally, kula yoma means all day, but it means kulu yomi. Really, it means all days, meaning the nights of all days, so every night of the week, until zimna chada pogav of chanina mendoisa. Until one time, this Igras Bas Machlas met up with Rav Chanina Mendoza, Omrele, and she says to him, Ilav de Machlas on Aloch Berakia, were it not for the fact that they announce about you, Rav Chanina Mendoza, in Shemayim, he's Zoharu b'Chanina over Torah, be careful with Chanina and with his Torah, if it weren't for that, in other words, Marsha explains, he's Chanina in the sense that he's a Baal Mais in Tovim, he does tremendous acts of chesed and mitzvahs, and b'todase, the fact that he also learns Torah. So she says to him, if it weren't for that, sakanticha, I would have endangered you, because it's nighttime now, I have the right to be out and about, you don't, and therefore I could harm you if I wanted, if it weren't for the fact that they announced in Shemayim that people should be, that everyone should be careful and not harm Rav Chanina because of his Torah and his Maisim Torah. Om Allah, so Rav Chanina Mendoza grabs the opportunity. He says to her, "I chashivna berakia, if that's so, if I'm really so important in Shemayim, gozer ani alayich shalei tavuri b'yishuv la'olam, then I am gozer on you that you should never go through settled areas where people live. You can go out in the fields and the forests and whatever, but not where people live." Omrele, so she says to him, I beg of you, please give me a little bit of room, give me some time when I can go through the settled areas. So Shavak lo leil Shabbos is for leil Reviyas, so he left Tuesday and Friday nights for her. The idea being that even before that, Tuesday and Friday nights were a time when people are less out and about. In fact, you have, for example, in Parshas B'chukosai, when it says that v'nasati gishmeichem v'itam, Hashem says, if you keep mitzvahs, then I'll bring you rain in its time. Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there from Sifra that it means Tuesday nights and Friday nights. So even before Rav Chanina Mendoza, there's an interesting reason given for that, which is, we know that people from the villages would travel into the big cities on Mondays and Thursdays. That way they could hear Kriyas HaTorah. That way, if they have court cases, they could go because the Batei Dinim sat in the big cities on Mondays and Thursdays. So what happens, therefore, is, so on Sunday night, people are traveling to the city. On Monday night, the ones who stayed all day in the city are traveling back. Wednesday night and Thursday night, same thing, because they're going in and out of the city for their dinner Torah and whatever. Friday night, of course, they're not traveling. And Motzei Shabbos, I don't see an explanation of. But the point is, therefore, Tuesday night, they're not traveling to the cities or from the cities because it's far apart enough from Monday and from Thursday. And Friday night, of course, they're not traveling to the Shabbos. So those are the days when people are less likely to be out and about anyway. And therefore, Rav Chanina Mendoza was able to leave those nights to Igros Bas Machlas. Until the two, then it again happened. Chada zimna pogabe be'abaya. One time, the same Igras Bas Machlas, a couple hundred years later, met up with Abaya. Amrale, and again she says the same thing to him. Ilavd machriz yaloch berakia. He's zahru benachmeni uteirasei. If it weren't for the fact that they announce about you and Shemayim, be careful with Nachmeni and be careful with his Torah. As we've learned in various places, Abaya is called in a number of places in Shas Nachmeni. So there's different explanations. Does it mean the Rashbam says over here, and Rashi says in some places that what it is his real name was Abaya, but he was nicknamed Nachmeni because Rabba Nachmeni, his uncle, raised him. And then there's an opinion the other way around, the Rav Shuda Gaon brings the other way around, that his real name was Nachmeni, but because Nachmeni was Rabba's father's name, he didn't want to call the child Nachmeni after, because then he'd be using his father's name, so he nicknamed him Abaya, either Abaya Meloshin Abba, because he's named after his father, or it's an acronym for Asher B'chol Yerucham Yosem, that in you, Hashem, a Yosem, finds mercy, and Abaya was, as we know, a double orphan. Anyway, whatever the case, so Igros Bas Machlas says to him that they make an announcement in Shemayim about you, be careful about Nachmeni and be careful about his Torah, because again, Abaya was also Oisik in Torah and in Gemilas Chasadim, so if it weren't for that, Havasakanticha, I would endanger you, because again, it's one of my nights when I have the right to be out. Allah, so again, Abaya says to her, if I'm really that important in Shemayim that they make such an announcement, then I make a gzera on you that you should not go through the settled areas ever. I'm not even going to leave you an opportunity. Like Rav Chanina ben Doisa, you're never allowed in the settled areas. So the question is, after all, we do see that Igros Bas Machlas does come through the settled area, and her minions and her the various shadim under her do come into the settled areas. So the answer is Amri. So the answer, Hani Gaz Yosem Ninhu, those are when they're going through the byways and the bypaths and whatever, for example, through the vineyards, the Shamti Susya, sometimes their horses bolt, sometimes their horses start running away, but also Davri Lahu and the Shadim come to get their horses, and at that point they're in the Yishuv, at that point they're in the settled areas, but in other words, the idea being on a normal basis, they're not allowed to be there, just when it happens, you have something like that where you find Shadim in the settled areas, but not normally. Ben Yoyada also points out the word Gaz Yosa over here, according to Rashi and the Rashbam, means something like bypaths, means something like side paths where they go on, and then sometimes their horses get away from them. Ben Yoyada also says the word Gaz Yosa means like the ones who are separated, like it means, the individual Shadim will get separated from the group and like sort of get lost and end up in the settled areas, but not normally.
Regarding Abaye, his names, if that's the source for the Gemara, that we don't give our parents' names when they're alive.
Actually, it could be the other way around. We don't know whether Rabba's parent, we don't know whether Rabba's father, Nachmeni, was still alive when Abaya was named. Abaya was Rabba's nephew. So his father, the Gemara mentions his father's name in Zvachim, his father's name was Pailil, was a brother of Rabba, and he named his son, but actually he didn't. The Gemara tells us in Kedushin that Pailil passed away when Abaya's mother was pregnant with him. So I guess Rabba then who raised the baby, so he named him Nachmeni after it's his own grandfather, it's the child's own grandfather, and also Rabba's father. But yeah, there's no indication one way or the other whether Nachmeni was still, whether Nachmeni, Rabba and Pailel's father, was still alive or not. Lamaisa, I mean, Sfardim or Noyig, they gavka do name after the living, Ashkenazim don't. Both, I mean, you have various places in the Gemara where it seems that they did regularly give names to children after people who were still living. Among the Nesi'im, for example, they went back and forth for several generations between Shimon and Gamliel, and later on between Yehuda and Gamliel, and Mepashtus each time. You don't have, the grandchild wasn't necessarily born only after his grandfather passed away. But yeah, from here, there's no proof one way or the other, because we don't know whether Nachmeni was still alive when Abaya was born and named.
So where do we have this minhag from?
So the minhag of Ashkenazim, there's a number of reasons given. One of them actually has to do with this that we're saying, that Rabba didn't want to call him Nachmeni. The problem is that if you name after a parent who's still alive, then you are likely to call the child by his own name, because not everybody is going to do like Rabba and give the kid a nickname instead. And then it's not derech eretz, stick to your parents when they're around, also to be calling their personal name, and they're going to think you're talking to them. So both minhagim have what to rely on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go on. The Amalei Rav L'Ravas. Now let's talk about some advice that Rav gave to various Talmidim of his. Number one, to Rav Asi. He tells him three pieces of advice. Loi tadur b'masad loi tzonif basusya v'loi novach b'kalva. Number one, don't live in a city where no horses neigh or no dogs bark. Because in a city where there are, in a city that has horses that neigh and dogs that bark, thieves will be afraid to try to do anything in that city, and enemies will be afraid to try to break into the city, because you have the dogs will bark and alert everybody. The horses, especially horses, sleep very lightly. You'll be able to use the horses to chase after them. So therefore it's safer in such a city. Number two, he tells him, "Va'al tadur be'ir d'reish masa asya." Don't live in a city where the mayor, where the head of the city, is a doctor. Now, why not? Rashi says two explanations. Well, first of all, Rashi says that the word asya can be a doctor or it can be a talmid chacham. Either way, the reason is because he's going to be busy with his medicine or with his Torah, as the case may be, and therefore he won't take care of things in the city properly. This is similar to what we said yesterday, that talmid chacham, that you shouldn't have a talmid chacham as mayor, because then he's fartift in his Torah, and then he's not taking care of mili d'alma in the city. We talked about yesterday what the Rebbe says about it in a sicha, that there's different kinds of talmid chachamim. You want a talmid chacham who's more attuned to what the world needs, and therefore and then figures out according to Torah what to do for them rather than the other way around. There's other points also. As far as a Talmid Chacham being the mayor, Ben Yehoyada points out actually there are a few problems with a Talmid Chacham being a mayor or community leader. One of them is that, again, that's going to distract him from his learning. Another one is that people often don't like their leaders, especially if the leader is supposed to be like he's supposed to do, and tells the people off when they do wrong. So then people are not going to like him, because people don't like to be told off when they're wrong, and that's going to rub off on the other Talmid Chachamim in town as well. So even if you yourself are not the mayor, but you are a Talmid Chacham, and therefore people are going to come to dislike the Talmid Chachamim, and you're going to get caught up in that as well, as a second explanation. And the third reason is because people who lead the community are expected to dress the part, and then you're going to have to be keeping up with the Joneses, and you're going to have to be making sure that you and your wife have better quality clothing or whatever, and it's going to take time away from your learning. So those are the reasons Ben Yehoyada says that why it's not so good if the mayor or the community leaders or whatever are Talmid Chachamim. Other than that, going back to our Gemara over here, where it says the word Asya, there is a different girsa that the word is not Asya, but rather Asi. So in that case, Rav is telling Rav Asi, don't be in a city where the head of the city is Asi, meaning you yourself shouldn't allow yourself to be appointed as mayor or as community leader or whatever, for the reasons that we said before, because it'll distract you from learning, and because it'll make it that now you have to wear better clothing, et cetera, et cetera. Ben Yehoyada says another point also, doctors in particular tend to be very exaggeratedly concerned about their health. So what are you going to have, for example? You're going to have one day, they need to gather, or they need to get a community meeting together in order to discuss some urgent thing for the city. And the guy's going to say, I can't, it's too cold out, it's too hot out, I haven't eaten yet, it's not healthy, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, the thing is going to end up getting left undone. Whereas if he's not a doctor, then regular non-doctors are not as concerned about that. And therefore, he'll go and do, and then do whatever it takes. Okay. And the third piece of advice that Rav gives Rav Asi, v'loy tinsiv tauti, don't marry two wives, because then they're gonna then they can get together and plot against you. E nasvas tauti, but if you do marry, if for whatever reason you find it necessary to marry two wives, obviously this is before Cherem Derben Gershem, nosiv tlas. Marry a third wife as well, because that way, even if two of them get together and start plotting against you, the third one will tell you what's going on. Okay. Next, Amalei Rav Lerav Kahana. Now Rav had different pieces of advice for another one of his Talmidim, Rav Kahana. He tells him, number one, hafoich benevelta, turn over a carcass. In other words, be willing to do, first of all, hafoich benevelta, be involved with a carcass, like working with it, cutting it apart or whatever. Veloy tepoch b'mili, don't turn over, don't get involved with words. Now, what does that mean? Marsha explains, when you're talking too much, then that leads to, among other things, it can lead to a person comes to nivel peh. Person starts speaking foul language or derogatory talk or whatever. So therefore, like they sort of a play on words. Better to have nevela than nibble peh. There's other explanations as well. One of them, one of Ben Yehoyada says that one possibility about loy tepach b'mili, don't become a broker. Like don't become the kind of person make a parnasa where your whole parnasa involves talking to people. Instead, your parnasa should be with something actual, where you're actually accomplishing something practical, even if that practical thing is only, let's say, cutting up a nevela to feed to animals or whatever. Also, Rav tells him, pshoit nevelta b'shuka, be willing to strip off the skin of a carcass in the marketplace, the shokel agra, and get paid for that. V'loy tema kana abra v'kana ano v'gabra rabba ano. Don't say, I am a koyin, and I'm a great person, v'sanya b'milsa, and it's degrading for me to do that. No, because you're doing it in order to earn a living, and therefore don't worry about the degradation of it. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta comments that, you know, we're saying over here, on the face of it, we're saying Kanana means I am a Koyan. Was this Rav Kahana, in fact, a Koyan? In fact, we had earlier in our Masechta where Rav Kahana, the Pashtus, the same Rav Kahana, had said that the reason why I ended up going into Golos, he eventually had to escape from Bavel and move to Eretz Yisrael, was because I married a Bas Koyan. In other words, he felt he wasn't of the caliber to be the kind of Talmid Chacham where it's good for him to marry a Bas Koyan. So you see that he himself wasn't a Koyan. Otherwise, what's the problem? So according to Tosfos, one possibility is when he says "v'loy tema kahana ana," doesn't mean I am a kohen. It means I am kahana. I am the great Rav Kahana, a big Talmid Chacham, and it's beneath my dignity to do it. Don't think that way. On the other hand, there are possibilities. It seems from various Gemaras that there were a number of Rav Kahanas in that generation. So it could be the one we're talking about over here was a kohen, and the one we were talking about earlier on Daf Mem Test was not. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Rav is telling him, no matter how degrading the work is, be willing to do it, even in public, and get paid for it, rather than saying it's beneath my dignity as a Talmid Chacham to do it, and the people should be supporting me. From here and from various other Gemaras, the Rambam takes a very strong stand against Talmid Chacham and being supported by the community. He says it's a Chilul Hashem, and it's using the Torah as a spade to dig with, which it says in Pirkei Avos is a really bad thing, etc., etc. The Rambam himself says, though, the fact is most people aren't noyig like that. He himself says he's a das yochid in that. And later poskim talk about it. In particular, the Tashbitz has a number of truvas on it where he says, very nice that Rambam says that. With all due respect to the Rambam, we can't run Jewish society that way, because otherwise very few people are going to have the opportunity to learn Torah, and the Torah is going to end up being forgotten altogether, chas v'shalom. So therefore, yes, it is legitimate for a Talmid Chacham to be supported by the community so that he can learn Torah. In fact, Reb Moshe, Feinstein, in one of his Truvas, goes so far as to say that if a person thinks I'm going to be machmer on myself like the Rambam, and the result of that is that he's not going to be a member of a kollel where he could have been, or a rov where he could have been, etc., then adrabba, it's an advice of the Yetzirah that's telling him to do that, to go and be machmer on himself when that's not necessary. Obviously, if he's able to be, obviously, if he has the ability to support himself without needing the tzibur to support him, so much the better. But that would only be, for example, if let's say he inherited wealth or something. Okay. Another piece of advice that Rav gives Rav Kahana, salkas le'igra, even if you go only up to the roof, which is an expression meaning like even if you just go on a very short trip, shirusach b'hadoch, always make sure that your food is with you. Don't depend on that you're going to be able to find food on the way. And another piece of advice, according to some of the Mefarshim, it's actually a continuation of the same one. Maya kori b'masa b'zuza. Even if 100 pumpkins are selling in town for one zuz, in other words, pumpkins, which are a good nutritious food, are very, very cheap. Nevertheless, tusek knafach niavu, they should be under the skirts of your garment. In other words, still, it's a continuation of the same thing. Make sure always that you have food with you when you go on a trip, even if food is very, very cheap. And that area, don't think I'll just go and buy food once I'm there. Always take food along with you. There's a few other explanations what this last part about the pumpkins means. The Aruch gives an explanation that it means if you find an amazing deal like that, 100 pumpkins for one zuz, which is really, really cheap, then hide that because you don't want people to give you an ayin hara for it. Okay. Next, Amalei Rav L'Chia Brei. Now, Rav gave advice to his son Chia. Loi tishti sama, don't take medicine. Rashi and the Rashbam says, because then what happens is you have to take them regularly. You may end up getting addicted to them, and then you're going to waste money on them. That also Rashi says another point that we learned earlier in the Masechta, that after all, every kind of medicine, it's good for one part of your body, but it's bad for a different part. So when you can avoid it, obviously we're not talking about when a person is dangerously sick, but in other words, that shouldn't be your first line of thing, your first line of defense is to take medicine. As Rashbam puts it, if you're able to use some other refuah, then do that instead. And then take medicine only if you have no other alternative. Then Veloy Teshava Nigra, then he tells him a second piece of advice, don't take large steps, because the Gemara mentions in various places that we learned in Shabbos, for example, that taking large steps takes away part of a person's eyesight, so you don't want to do that. That's one explanation that Rashi and Rashbam bring. The Rashbam brings a second explanation. Nigra means a canal, means a water canal. Don't try to jump over a canal, because you might fall in or whatever. And number three, v'lo ta'akeh kocha. Number three, Rav tells his son Chia, don't have a tooth extracted. Because in the end, the Rashbam says, don't worry about it. Eventually, it will heal. Eventually, it'll heal on its own, and you don't have to have it extracted. With that said, I mean, you know, a lot of this advice in the Gemara, some of these things, we say nishtanu ativim, human nature has changed, and in fact, there's a letter from the Rebbe in the Yuds, where he wrote to somebody who was concerned about, who asked advice from the Rebbe what to do about his teeth, and the Rebbe told him, go to a dentist, and if he has to extract them, he has to extract them. I, or Gemara. But or Gemara is one of those things we say nishtanu ativim, people's natures have changed, and not necessarily medical advice that was valid then is necessarily applicable now. Okay. Also, v'loitekane b'chivya, and there could also be the difference, you know, I mean, it's not like they had modern dentistry in those days. In those days, extracting a tooth was very painful. They didn't have Novocaine, after all. You also have, I guess, there was probably more chance that the socket afterwards could get infected, whereas nowadays they can give you antibiotics for that. So I guess that also has to do with it. Anyway, continues Rav, v'loitekane b'chivya, don't provoke a snake, because it might attack you. And don't provoke a goy, because he might attack you. So in fact, in that connection, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, Gimel Ein Miskanin Behen, there are three creatures that you shouldn't provoke them unnecessarily. The Elohe Nochri Kotten, the Nochash Kotten, the Talmud Kotten, a small goy, a small snake, and a small Talmud. So be careful not to start up with them. Now, obviously, they never talked about that first one with the goy a lot of times in sichas and in letters. It doesn't mean, obviously, giving in and just, bowing and scraping in front of the goy, whatever he wants you to do. You do. Adarabi, you have to have Jewish pride in front of him and not compromise in Torah and mitzvahs. But on the other hand, you also don't, sometimes you could avoid the issue in the first place rather than tangling with him and then finding that you're in a situation where you have to, where you have to kowtow to him. Anyway, my timer, why those three? Because their kingship is behind their ears. In other words, it's very easy for them. They're gonna get greater. They're gonna get greater and bigger, and then they can take revenge on you. In fact, with the goy, actually, there's a story in a medrash that tells how there was a goy. In the time of the Amoraim, who was herding pigs, and one time some Talmidim from the yeshiva came out and beat him, and many years later he actually became the Roman Emperor Diocletianus, Diocletian, and he was going to take revenge against the Chachamim, but then there was a series of Nisim that happened, and he finally forgave the Chachamim, but he warned them in wording similar to what it says in the Gemara over here, that never start up with a small goy, you never know what he might become. There's also a story in a medrash in a similar vein involving Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, that there was a ship that sank, and there was one Roman made it to shore, but he lost all his clothes, and he's begging the Jews over there to help him, and they're all laughing at him until Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua helped him. And again, many years later, this guy became emperor, and he wanted to take revenge on the Jews until Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua came to him with a gift from the Jews, and the emperor forgave him for the money and for the fact that after all, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua had helped him. As far as what we're saying over here, Talmud Chacham, now on the face of it, a Talmud, we're talking about Talmud Chacham, is not going to take revenge against a person. So Marsha says that, no, what we're talking about, let's say somebody else's Talmud. A person's own Talmud, a person is generally not jealous of his own Talmud's accomplishments, and the Talmud himself usually has derech eretz for his Rebbe. But we mean, let's say somebody else's Talmud. Ben Yoyada says, we're not even talking about taking revenge. But imagine, for example, that let's say in the end it happens that you yourself, that Talmud, becomes such a great Talmud Chacham, greater than you, and you wind up having to learn by him, you're going to be tremendously embarrassed that when he was younger, you started up with him and provoked him. So therefore, don't do that. Okay. Next, Omale Rav Ivu Bray. Rav says to his son Ivu, Tarchi Bach B'Shmaita, I've worked hard to teach you Torah, to teach you Gemara, V'loy Mistaya Milsa, but it's not working out, you don't have the head for it. So therefore, B'Pashtus, you're going to go into business. Ta Agmarach Milu D'Alma, so come, I'll teach you ways of the world, I'll teach you practical advice for life. And by the way, I mean, each of these pieces of advice, Ben Yehoyada points out, even though on the surface they're pieces of advice of how to succeed in business, each of them is also a Torah Dikka message. Each of them is also a message in Avoda. Because after all, Rav, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, never spoke Sichas Chulin, so you're not going to have a Stam talk, that he's Stam saying business advice that doesn't have a deeper Teuchen to it as well. So number one, he tells him, Ad Chola Akarech, while the sand is still on your feet, Zavinach Zabin, sell whatever it is you need to sell. In other words, you came back from a business trip. You have merchandise with you. Don't first get comfortable, and then you're going to start selling it. Right away, start selling it, even while the dirt is still on your feet. So that way, you can hurry up and go and be able to buy new merchandise and then keep on running things. A deeper idea behind it, Ben Yehoyada says, it means do tshuva as soon as possible. Don't wait until you're old and gray and don't have the kayach anymore. Do tshuva right away. Next, he tells him, kol mili zoven v'techrat, with anything else that you sell, with most things that you sell, you might end up regretting it later. So you sell something and later on the price goes up, you're going to feel bad, I should have held on to it. And that kind of thing eventually will teach you to be careful and not sell things right away. But bar mechamra, except for wine, dezabin v'loy techrat, that you can always sell and never feel bad, even if the price goes up later, because wine can very easily spoil and turn to vinegar, and then you're going to lose your whole investment. So therefore, that kind of thing, it's better to sell right away. Next, he tells him, shori kisach psach sakich. Open up your money bag and untie your money bag, then open up your bag. Meaning, Rashi and the Rashbam say, when you're selling to people, first get the money and put it in your money bag, then open up the sack and start giving them the merchandise. In other words, don't sell on credit. Also, he tells him, Kaba me arav le kura me igra, better to get a kav from the ground rather than a kur, which is 180 times as much, from the roof. In other words, it's better to go someplace nearby for a business deal, even if you're not going to make as much from it, rather than to travel great distances, even if you stand to gain much more from it, because traveling is not always such a good thing. On this one, Ben Yehud Yada says it also refers to Isurusa de la Eila and Isurusa de la Santa, better a little bit of accomplishment in Torah and in mitzvahs that you accomplish with Isurusa de la Santa, like, so to speak, from the ground, rather than a huge amount, Me'igra, from the roof, that the Eivishter is mashpia on you. Then Rav continues with another piece of advice. Tamra b'chaluzach, as soon as you have the dates in you, as soon as you have dates, which in those days they made beer out of dates, as soon as you have dates in your keli, where you keep the dates, lebeis sudna rohit, right away run to the brewers to turn it into beer, because otherwise, if you don't, you're going to end up eating them, and then you lose your, then you lose your investment. So va'ad kama, up to what point? Like, in other words, there comes a point when you have enough dates that even if you eat a few of them, it's not going to make a difference. So omer rava ad tlosa saw, up to three saw. Once you have three saw of dates in hand, then you don't have to worry so much about rushing right away to the brewers, because even if you eat a few of them, that's not going to make a big deal. But if you have a smaller amount of them, then hurry up and get them turned into beer so you'll be able to make some money out of it. So in this connection, since we're talking about beer and making money from it, Amar Papa, E loy did a moish. So the Papa says, if I hadn't brewed beer, loy e atri, I wouldn't have become rich. Tosfos points out that actually in that same Gemara that we had before about Rav Kahana on Daf Mem Tes, we had a different thing. Rav Papa said that they attributed the fact that he became rich to the fact that he married a Bas Koyan. He felt he was of the caliber to have married a Bas Koyan and for it to be a good thing. So the answer is, Tosfos says, Hova Ho Gamale. Both things were contributing factors. Once he married a Bas Koyan, then Minashamayim, it was going to be that he's going to become rich. And the Keli for that was that he ended up becoming a brewer and becoming rich from that. Ikadamri, another version is Amar Rav Chista, Eloi Dinamoi Shichur Eloi Yatri. Another version is that it's Rav Chista that said a couple of generations earlier than our papa that if I hadn't brewed beer, that if I hadn't become a brewer, I wouldn't have become rich. Now, we said the word in Aramaic for a brewer is sudna. So my sudna, what's the deeper meaning behind that word sudna for a brewer? Amar Rav Chista, Soidnar Ugmilas Chasadim. It's a nice secret, and there's Gmilas Chasadim involved, because after all, you can become rich from being a brewer, so therefore it's a good idea, it's a good secret of how to earn money. And you end up being able to earn a lot of money, and therefore being able to do Gmilas Chasadim with it. Because after all, the Ashbam points out, you don't have a lot of capital investment that you need to make. Unlike there are certain businesses where you need to put in a lot of money in order to make money. Brewing is not like that. The raw materials and everything are fairly cheap. So therefore, you can stand to make a lot of money from it, and then you have a lot more money available for Gemilas Chasadim. Ben Yehoyada points out that the word sudna, the gematria of the word sudna, plus one for the kolal, as we often find in gematria, is you can add a kolal equals the same gematria as the word chasadin. So therefore showing that there's a certain connection between brewing and gemilas chasadin. Marshall points out, I mean, the reason why we're calling it a secret is because most people think of dates as something to eat. Most people don't realize how you can brew beer from it. Ben Yehoyada says it may not just have been regular beer. Rav Papa and Rav Chista may have had a special formula that made their beer more nutritious or better for your health or whatever. And therefore, it was like a secret that they were able, that they figured out, or that they were helped, Min HaShemayim, to figure out, and that helped make their beer sell better than others, and therefore they became rich. Okay, more business advice. Amar Papa, kol agav gavya boy. Anytime that you have something where you have to write a shtar and you have to later on collect it, eventually gavya boy. Eventually you're going to have to collect it. In other words, realize that there's a certain tircha in selling on credit. Yes, on the one hand you're getting more business, but on the other hand realize that on the other hand later on you're going to have to go and nudge the guy to give you the money. Marsha gives a different explanation. Agav literally means by the way. You have a concept called metalplin agav karka. you can you have a concept. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin and in some other places that you're able to be makna, a person, metaltlin, together with karka. And when he's koinin the karka, he's also koinin the metaltlin with it. Now, when you do that, it's also possible to use those metaltlin as collateral for a loan or something. Usually, you have only karka is under a shibud to a loan. But here you have, it is possible to make metaltlin be under a shibud as well, if it's metaltlin agav karka. But nevertheless, since they're metaltlin, it's very easy for the loiva to lose them or hide them or spend them or whatever, and then you don't have what to collect from. So we sort of Papa is telling us, be careful about that. Don't think because, oh, you know, we accomplished. I have a lien on these metaltlin, therefore I'm guaranteed. No, you're not guaranteed, because metaltlin are always, there's an inherent risk in them. And Rapapa continues, kol ashroi, again, whenever you sell something on credit, suffik, or whenever you lend money or whatever, suffik ossi, suffik loy ossi, there's always a doubt whether it's actually going to come. Is the person going to pay back, or is he going to default on it? Or de ossi, and even if it does come, it's not necessarily so good. Mois lois ninu, it can come as bad money. In other words, he pays back a little bit at a time, and then what happens is, psychologically, if you get a dollar, then you're fairly quick to spend it. Whereas if you get $100, then you're more cautious with it. So the same way, if, you know, somebody owes you $100, let's say, and he pays it off a dollar here, a dollar there, you're much more likely to fritter it away. Whereas if you had paid the whole amount or a large amount at once, you'd be more careful with it. So therefore, in other words, Rapapa is pointing out that, as business advice and also advice in Avoda, that be careful, you know, when you sell on credit, realize that there's a chance you might not even get it back. And even if you do, that you might get it back piecemeal, and then you're going to end up wasting it. Okay. More advice from Chachamim. Gimel Dvorim Amar Rabbi Yechanan Mishum Anshei Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yechanan said three pieces of advice in the name of the people of Yerushalayim. And we don't just mean when we say the people of Yerushalayim. We don't mean the later geyers in Yerushalayim. Anshei itself means important people. So it means there were important people who lived in Yerushalayim in his generation or the generations before him who gave these advice. Number one, Shati Yotze L'Mochama, when you're going out to war, Al Teitze B'Rishoyna El Teitze B'Achroyna. Don't go out in the first ranks. Go out in the last ranks. Kedeshet Tikonis B'Rishoyna. So that way, when you're returning home, let's say, for example, returning home regular after the battle, or if you have to run away, the Rashbam says, then you'll be able to come in first. So Marshall says, come on, what kind of advice is that? I mean, if everybody follows that, how are you going to have an army if everybody's going to be cowards like that? Ben Yehoyada says, we're not really talking. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, okay, maybe there's a difference between Milchamas Rishus and Milchamas Mitzvah, but Ben Yehoyada says that actually, and also Marashah says, anyway, why doesn't the Gemara point out the greater danger? If you're in the front ranks, you're more exposed to the enemy's attack. So Marashah leaves it as a question. Ben Yehoyada says that actually the Gemara is hinting at something involving the first and last mitzvahs in the Torah. The first mitzvah in the Torah is Pruvu. The last one is to write a Sefer Torah, Ba'atakis V'lachem Es Hashir Azos. So the Gemara is telling us, therefore, when you're going to fight against your Yetzirah, don't start first with the first mitzvah, period v'rivia. Namely, you're going to figure, I'm going to marry, and that's going to be good enough. First fartifsech in Torah for a while before you get married, which is the last mitzvah, v'atakis v'lachem es hashir azos, and later on, you'll be able to accomplish the first one. You'll be able to get married and be more successful at that. So that was the first one. Number two, v'aseh Shabbat chachol v'al tetzarech labrias. Number two, make your Shabbos a weekday rather than needing to take help from people, as we discussed yesterday, and as Tosfos mentioned briefly over here, that there's a difference. If a person has what to make Shabbos with, then he just is being cheap. Then we're saying that's not a good thing. Adraba, then we say that Hashem doesn't count a person's Shabbos and Yom Tov expenses against his Parnosa. So therefore, if a person is cheaper on Shabbos, then his Parnosa is going to end up getting reduced. And if he increases his spending on Shabbos, then Hashem will increase his Parnosa. But here we're talking about where a person is not yet at the point of taking tzedakah because he has enough for two meals. But if in order to make a third Shabbos meal, he needs to take tzedakah, then we're saying he shouldn't do that. And the third piece of advice, always make an effort to get together with somebody who the hour is smiling on him, meaning who has good mazel, which, as we said yesterday, first we said it meant to make a partnership. First, Rapapa had said it meant to go into a business partnership with him. And then we said, the Gemara said, it doesn't even have to mean that. It just means that you do business with him. That alone is enough that some of his mazel will transfer to you. more advice, Amar Rebbe, Shloisha Dvarim Amar Rebbe Shurban Levi Mishum Anshi Yerushalayim. Rebbe Shurban Levi gave three pieces of advice in the name of the people of Yerushalayim. Number one, Al Tarba B'Gnus. Don't be so commonly found in Gnus. Now, Gnus means something degrading. So what does that mean? So Rashi says it means don't have your house or do your business out in the open, in an open area. The Rashbam says the same thing. In other words, Gnus means that it's not that what you're doing in and of itself is shameful, but you're doing it out in the open, and therefore it's more likely to cause gnai, it's more likely to cause shameful results, because people are going to see what you're doing, and therefore that can create problems. And the reason is, Mishra Maisa Shahoya, the reason is because after all, the story that happened with David and Bathsheba, where he was outside and he saw what he shouldn't have seen. He saw her getting ready for mikveh, and then he had a taiva for her, and the whole story developed over there. So if he had been indoors, or doing his business indoors, and she had been doing her business indoors, then nothing would have happened. A different gears over here was not gnus, but rather dagois, which means roofs. So in other words, don't habitually be on the roof. And the reason is, because we see in the psukim over there that David was walking on the roof of his palace, and that's when he saw Bathsheba. Ben Yehoyada adds more generally, when a person is walking on the roof, he's likely to see a lot of things that he shouldn't otherwise see. So that's number one. Number two, Bitcha Bagra, if your daughter has become a Begeris, and which is officially 6 months after Bas Mitzvah, and she's not yet married, and you can't find her a chosan, Shachar Avdecha V'tenla, then even free your slave and give him to her as a husband. In other words, make sure she gets married off as soon as possible. Obviously, nowadays, we don't marry them off when they first become a Begeris, but in other words, the idea is still the same thing. Don't allow her to become an old maid. In fact, there's a pirush on Divrei Hayamim that's printed under Rashi's name, although it doesn't seem to actually be from Rashi, that mentions an example in the psukim of just that. It mentions that there was a guy named Sheshan who had a daughter but no sons. He had an eved named Yarcha, and the pasuk says actually he freed the eved and married him off to his daughter. So you have a real life example of that, where this Sheshan realized that otherwise he's not going to find a good shidduch for his daughter, so he freed his eved and married her off to him. And number three, Rabbi Shurban Levi quotes from the Anshei Yerushalayim, the Hevei Zohar Be'ishtecha Mechasana Harisha. Be careful between your wife and her first son-in-law, your first daughter that you marry off. So you have your first son-in-law, be careful about inappropriate relationships between your wife and him. My time, so what's the problem? Rav Chista Amar Mishum Erva. Rav Chista says there could be a problem of Erva because she's very fond of him. Usually we have the stereotype that mothers-in-law hate their in-laws, but that's really more mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law, really. It seems from this Gemara and from other Gemaras that mothers-in-law often got along very well, and still do nowadays, with their sons-in-law, and in particular their first one, then, they like very much. So therefore they can come, they might end up being mizana together, so you have to be careful about that. The Ikka de Amri, so that's Rav Chista Amar Mishum Erva, Rav Kahana Amar Mishum Mamon. Rav Kahana says it's because of money, because she may end up, again, she likes him, maybe not to the extent of being mizana with him, but to the extent of she's going to spend a lot of money on him more than they should, because she wants the money to go to him and to her daughter. And therefore, the Gemara says, Hava ha isnu, the fact is both considerations do apply, so therefore you need to be careful. In fact, there are Gemaras in some places that say that a chosan shouldn't live in his parents-in-law's house. And in fact, there's a Gemara in Ksubas where it says that Rav would give people makas maudus, for doing that. Tosfos, in one of those places in Kiddushin, says that nowadays it's more common. You have the common kind of expression, an edim of test. You have a son-in-law living and boarding with you. And it's more mutter for the reason, because nowadays they're not doing it so much because they want to be that close to the mother-in-law. It's more because that way they get to live there rent-free, for example. So therefore, it's a more common thing that people do that. And then Tosfos says over there it's allowed. Okay. Amar Rav Yechanan, Shloisha Minechle Olam Haba. There are three people who are going to be among those who inherit a special place in Olam Haba. Elohein, and they are as follows, Hador Be'Eretz Yisrael. Number one, a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael and keeps mitzvahs and learns Torah over there is accomplishing much more than he would in Chutz La'aretz. Number two, Vahamagado Bonav Talmud Torah, a person who has children and raises them to learn Torah is a very, very important thing. And number three, Vahamabdal Alayayin, Matsoy Shabbos, he makes Havdalah on wine on Matsoy Shabbos. So the Gemara says about that last one, Maihi, what are we talking about? I mean, obviously a person is required, Api Alacha, to make Havdalah on wine Matsoy Shabbos. So what exactly is the Maila of it that he's Noichle Erdem Abba? So the answer is Dimishayim Kiddush Al Avdalta, if he leaves over wine from Kiddush to Havdalah. So the Rashbam explains that what it means is he has very little wine. So like this, normally they would drink wine during their meal. So like this, he uses wine for Kiddush, but then he saves the rest of the wine, so he has enough for Havdalah rather than drinking more of it during the meal. Tosfos brings a different explanation that it means that it has to do with, we talked about a few days ago, about Kiddush during the night versus during the day. So what it is that we're talking about where he saves from the Kiddush by day for Havdalah by night, because it's true that Havdalah is not more important than Kiddush. Kiddush is more important. But nevertheless, he makes sure not to drink. So we're not talking about drinking during the meal. We're talking about he makes Kiddush by day, but then he leaves over as much as possible wine. He doesn't drink the full Revius. He drinks only Maloy Lugmov. And that way he has enough left for Havdalah. The Tur brings an explanation that it means that if he finds he doesn't have enough wine, he only has one cup of wine. Now, Havdalah, you can't make on bread. Kiddush, according to most poskim, you could. So therefore, so we're talking about a person who, under those circumstances, makes Kiddush on bread in order to save his wine for Havdalah. Then that's a mile of the Gemara is saying over here. The Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch brings another explanation from some Achronim, Knesset HaGdola and others, that what it means is that a person uses a large cup for the nighttime Kiddush, and then he drinks from it, and now it becomes pogrom, as we learned the other day. Then he adds wine to it to make it not pogrom anymore, and uses that same thing for the daytime Kiddush, and then does the same thing again for Havdalah. Then that's also called Meshayim Kiddush Al Avdalta, that like he's tying together Kiddush and Havdalah, and using to a certain extent the same wine for both of them.
How is it a mitzvah to take from Shabbos and give to Chayil? I mean, after all,
because Havdalah itself is also for Shabbos. It's for the honor of Shabbos that you're escorting it out. So therefore, according to that explanation, Adrabah, then you're using a large cup. You used some of the wine, you drank some of the wine for the nighttime Kiddush. Now you save that for the day. You add more wine to it and then make Kiddush over that. Then you drink some of that. Then and each time, of course, you have the cup is large enough to be able to drink Maloy Lugmov or Revius from it and still have enough. And then later on, you add a little more wine to it, and you have enough for Havdalah. That's the Knesset HaGdola and some other Achronim explain it that way.
So Havdalah is considered part of Shabbos?
Obviously, it's not part of Shabbos, but it's in honor of Shabbos. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Shloisha Machviz Aleihen HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'chol Yom. There are three people who Hashem makes an announcement on them every day about how, so to speak, like how impressed He is with them about the good that they're doing. Number one, Al Rava Kador B'Krach V'Enechote, a single man who lives alone in a city where there's constant temptations over there, but he doesn't sin, he doesn't get involved in Znus. There's women all around, in particular, there's rich women sometimes going around with jewelry and whatever, and he's not attracted to them. Number two, Val Onya Master Avedalavala, a poor person who finds a lost object, and he could really use it himself, but instead he goes and returns it. So Hashem is very impressed with that. Val Osha Ma'asa Perosa Bitsina, and for about a rich person who takes Meiser from his fruit in private, meaning like this, in other words, he's rich, he's giving a lot of Meiser, he could publicize it and then get a lot of covered from people for it, but instead he does it in private and doesn't look for the covered. So Hashem is very impressed with that. There's the idea. In other words, there's three kinds of Yetzirahs that a person has. There's a person wants covered, a person wants a person has tivus, physical tivus, a person wants covered, and a person wants money. So each of these three people is overcoming one of those major tivus. And with that said, by the way, the Rashba has in one of his Chuvas that it depends. If publicizing your mitzvah is going to induce other people to do the same kind of mitzvah, then Adarabi, you should publicize. If they asked him about a certain place where there was a rich yid who wanted to build or renovate a local shul and have a plaque put up with his name, and the Rashba says you should go ahead and do that. Mitzvah lefarisim oisim mitzvah, because that way other people will be induced to do the same thing. But here, I guess we're talking about where him doing it in public is not going to make that much of a difference, so therefore better he's doing it in private and not taking the glory for himself. So the Gemara tells, Rav Safra, Rava Kador B'Krachava, Rav Safra was in that situation of the first one. He was a single man living in a large city. Tani Tana Kameder de Rava Rav Safra. So Tana taught this Braisa that we just said about, now we quoted it as Omer Rav Yechanan, but there were other Gersois that it's not Omer Rav Yechanan, but rather a Braisa. So anyway, so Tana taught this Braisa in front of Rava and Rav Safra about these three that Hashem is very impressed with. Tzav Uponav de Rav Safra. Rav Safra's face lit up in happiness, because I'm in that situation. I'm a Rava Kador B'Krach, so it means I'm accomplishing a very great thing. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to him, Lav Kagoin Mar, the Braisa is not talking about somebody like you, where you after all sit in the Bes Medrash all day, and you're not exposed to these temptations on the street. Ela Kagoin Rav Chanina v'Rav Oshia. What it means is, for example, Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia, to have Ushkafi be'arad Yisrael, they were shoemakers, they lived in Eretz Yisrael. They sat and did their work in the street where the Zonas were found. They would make shoes for the Zonas. And they would bring the shoe, and they would bring the shoes to their customers. Or there's a different gears on the side in he, which means the women, these Zonas would come to them for shoes. And they would bring them to them. So yeah, Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia would bring the shoes to their customers. But inhi mistakli bahu, the women would be staring at Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia. But the inu loy madlin inayu they stakuli bahu. Meanwhile, Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia wouldn't even lift their eyes to look up at the women because they didn't want to be caught in taiva. So that's the kind of Rabba Kador B'Krach. That's the kind of unmarried man living in a big city where he's constantly in exposed to these temptations, like Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia were, and he still holds himself back. And these Zonas themselves were so impressed. When they would swear to each other, the formula they would use for swearing, they would say, by the life of the holy rabbis of Eretz Yisrael, meaning in other words, they knew themselves, even being Zonas, they realized how holy these Chachamim are, especially you have when people stay away from Erva, then that means, the Kedusha means, among other things, staying away from Erva. So they themselves recognized how great Rav Chia and Rav Chanina and Rav Oshia were, and they would swear on them like you would swear on a holy object. So therefore, so Rava tells Rav Safra, that's the kind of Rava Kador B'Krach that the Braisa is talking about, not somebody like you who sits all day in the Bes Medrash. In fact, you have something similar to that the Alter Rebbe talks about in Perek Lamed of Tanya, where you have, for example, a yid who keeps mitzvahs might think to look down on the simple people who are in the marketplace all day and do various kinds of avodas. So the Alter Rebbe tells them, don't look down on them. Number one, because among other, it's true they're responsible to control their yetzahara, but you have to realize they're exposed to a lot more temptations in sitting over there and doing business in the marketplace than you are sitting all day in the Bes Medrash and learning Torah, or you yourself may be the kind of person who naturally is a very, very, very quiet person and very studious person and not prone to those kinds of taivas like they are. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Shloisha Kodesh Baruch Hu Oyhavan. There are three people that Hashem particularly loves them. Misha Enik Koyas, number one, somebody who doesn't get angry. Number two, Misha Enim Mishtaker, a person who doesn't get drunk. And number three, Misha Enim Mamid Amidosev, a person who's not particular about his midos. In other words, people do things to him, and he doesn't, people insult him, or people do other things, or people do other things against him, and he doesn't mind. He brushes it off. So Hashem particularly loves such people. There's in fact a verse that I've heard. I'm not sure of the ultimate source of it, that says that if a person is insulted and in public and he doesn't answer back, then he has a special power, minashamayim, to give brachas more so than regular people. And his brachas will be niskayim. Anyway, on the other hand, continues the
Gemara. It's also a recipe for people to continue doing it and doing it much worse.
No, because obviously there can be mamid amidosev. He doesn't have to. It doesn't mean that he has to just be completely unfeeling. He can go and take steps. For example, take him to Beis Din, let's say, and get the matter dealt with. But in other words, he doesn't react by just lashing out at them or whatever. Which, after all, what good is that going to do? Obviously, if it's the kind of situation where he can talk to them and tell them to stop, then he'll do that. But we're talking about just, you know, most people. If you insult them, they're just gonna, you know, they're gonna get angry and insult right back. That's not constructive.
It's not so obvious that the Gemara means that.
But that is what it means. Mamid amidosav in particular means that he's particular about his midos, so he doesn't have to be particular about them, but obviously he can't be a doormat either.
No, but he should withhold his temper, but still go ahead and press and go to the Beis Din or take other steps.
Yes.
That's not so obvious from this Gemara.
The Gemara is not mentioning that, the Fedosh, but we find that based on other Gemaras and based on other sources, that's what it means. Because after all, I don't remember offhand, but you have. I mean, for example, obviously you don't want that these people are going to be able to do the same thing to other people as well. You can't be frum on somebody else's cheshbon. So if you not doing anything to them is going to cause they're going to meanwhile go and do the same thing to somebody else, then for that reason alone you have a responsibility to stop them. Okay. Onward. Shloisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Soinan. On the other hand, there are three kinds of people that Hashem hates. Number one, Hamadaber Echad B'Peh V'Echad B'Lev. Somebody who speaks one thing in his mouth and a different thing in his heart. In other words, he's hypocritical. Number two, Vahayadeya Edus B'Chaveira V'Enimeid Loi. Number two, somebody who knows Edus that he could say in Beis Din on behalf of somebody else, and he doesn't, which actually he's over on Issu in the Torah, Im Lo Yagid V'Nos Avonu, but in addition, Hashem hates him for that, because now he's causing that poor guy is going to end up losing money or whatever, where you had evidence that you could have brought in his favor, and you don't. And number three, v'horoyed var erva b'chaveroi umeid b'yichid. Number one, somebody who sees somebody else doing a thing of erva, and he goes and tells Edus about him individually in Beis Din. Now, if two people come to Beis Din together and say Edus about it, then fine, Beis Din can take steps to punish the person. But one aid, as we're going to see in the following story, is not going to do any good anyway. So therefore, it just amounts to lashon hara. So the Gemara tells, for example, it once happened that a man named Tuvia did an Aveira involving Erva, involving Znus, but also Zigud L'chudev Asid Be'kameder Papa. A man named Zigud, another Yid named Zigud, came by himself and gave Edus in front of Rapapa of what Tuvia had done. Nagde L'Zigud, and Rapapa had Zigud whipped. Amalei, so Zigud says, how could that be? Tuvia chot of a Zigud mingad. How could it be? Tuvia does the Aveira and Zigud gets the, and Zigud gets the lashes. In fact, this became a popular expression. The Gemara uses it elsewhere in Makkos as an expression like that, where one person does something wrong and somebody else gets the punishment. How could that be? Amalei, so the Papa tells him, ain. Yes, and I'll tell you why. Dichtiv lo yokum aid echabish. The pasuk says that one aid cannot stand up against a person. In other words, that one aid is not believed. Va'af l'chodach ashad today. You alone came and gave aidus on him. Obviously, shem rabba alma, come up to stay. You're only coming in order to be motzi shemra on him, and therefore for that you get malchus. But Amar of Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, Amar Rav, Mutar L'Snoi. So even though Zigud, or somebody in that situation, shouldn't be coming and saying Edus, because he's only one person by himself, but he is allowed to, if he knows that he saw Tuvia doing this Dvar Erva, he's not allowed to say Edus, but he is allowed to hate him. Because after all, he knows that he's a Rosh. After all, the pasuk says that if you see your enemy's donkey lying down under its load, now my son, we have to ask, what kind of enemy are we talking about? Ilema son and nochri, are we talking about a goyish enemy? Valtanya, but we learn in a brisa, sona shamru, sona yisrovelo, sona nachri. The kind of enemy that we're talking about in the psukim over there is a Jewish enemy, not a goyish one, because the Gemara explains above Matthias, there's a whole machlokas over there, whether the tzar ba'al chayim is daraisa or derabanan. If you say it's daraisa, then you do have to help a goy with an animal collapsing under its load as well. If it's only derabanan, then maybe not. Anyway, so obviously, therefore, El Pshita Soni Yisrael, so we're talking, therefore, about a Jewish enemy, but then the question is, since when are you allowed to hate another Yid? The Pasuk says you shouldn't hate another Yid in your heart. Ella, so it has to be a case like this. The ikas, and on the other hand, Ella de ikasadi de ovedi sura. If you mean that there are actual, there's two edim that he did in Aveda, then what do you mean? You hate him personally. Kula alma nami misnu sonni lei. Then everybody hates him. Then the expression shouldn't be soinacha, implying like your personal enemy. Ella, my shnohai. So why are we singling out this person and saying you are his enemy? Ella lafti hai gavna. So it must be a case like this, the chazi be'ihu dvar erva, where for example Zigurd saw Tovia doing an avera, and he's not able to go to Beis Din like we said, but he is allowed to hate him because he knows for a fact that he did an avera. That's the kind of thing the Torah is telling him. Nevertheless, though, you still have a responsibility to help him if his animal is collapsing. Now, Tosfos asks, in that case, why? If we're saying that that you're allowed to hate him, then why Taka should he have that? In fact, the Gemara mentions over there that in Bava Metzia, when it talks about the dinim of unloading and reloading an animal, that if you have two people you need to help, one of them is an enemy and the other one is a friend, it's a mitzvah to help the enemy first in order to control your Yetzirah. But here, if you're allowed to hate the guy, and even the Gemara is going to say it's a mitzvah too, then why do you need to control your Yetzirah? So Tosfos answers, kamayim upon him. If you hate him, even you have a justified reason to. The fact is, he's going to hate you as well. So like this, yeah, and that, and he doesn't have a valid reason to do that. So you help him with his animal, that will take away, that'll control his Yetzirah. And for that matter, yours, because eventually you're going to come to a real sinner, not just based on one that he did the Aveda, but an unreasonable sinner, and you don't want that. So therefore, it helps control that. There's actually a Medrash someplace that tells a story like that about two Jews who hated each other, and in the end, one of them had his animal was collapsing under its load, and the other one sees, and at first he's thinking not to help, but he realizes, look, the Torah says, Chamor Seinacha, so he goes and helps. And eventually they became friends from that. They eventually, the first one realized, the second one, the other guy wouldn't have helped me if he didn't really like me, and therefore they ended up making up with each other. With that said, there are some Mefarshim who explain that actually the Gemara there was talking about, if, let's say, you hate a person, even though you're not allowed to, api halacha, nevertheless, that's the kind of case where you have a mitzvah to put him ahead of your friend in order to break that yetzahara of yours. But maybe if you're hating him, like here, saying here in the Gemara, because he did an avera, maybe he doesn't go ahead of an oyev. I think the Alter Rebbe brings it that way, in the halachas in Hilchos Ovid Drachim. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Rav Nachman Beitzchok, I'm a mitzvah l'snoisei. Rav Nachman Beitzchok says, actually, it's not just you're allowed to hate such a person, it's a mitzvah to you. Shenema yiras Hashem snois ra. As the pasuk says, fearing of Hashem is hating evil. Now we have the famous thing that Alter Rebbe points out in Perkwan the Beis of Tanya, that you can hate the guy, but you also have to love him as well, because for it he has a nefesh elikis, and in fact it's more that you have pity on him, that you have rachmanos on his nefesh elikis, that it's in such a bad way, and therefore you work to try and improve that. Okay. And now, whatever stresses over there, of course, that anyway, all of this only applies if he's am she'itcha b'toro mitzvah, only a yid of the same caliber as you, and you know that you could have, you tried telling him toicha and tell him to not do it, and he went and did it anyway. So then the Gemara is saying over here that mutter l'snoisei, but even then, you still have to have rachmanos on him as well. In a case like that, where a person has done a serious aveda like that, we're saying you can't tell based in because you're only one aid, but you yourself were saying or allowed, or even a mitzvah to hate him, is a person allowed to tell his Rebbe? Where the idea is that then the Rebbe will know to stay away from this person, and maybe also the Rebbe will be able to have a good effect on him. But the fact is you're only one person, so can you do that? So Rav Ashi answers, Amalei, E yada de mehemen l'rabbe k'dei t'rei. If the person, for example, Zigurd, who wants to go and give the report to his Rebbe, if he knows that his Rebbe trusts him implicitly as much as to aid him, l'emalei, that he can tell him, because then it'll have a constructive purpose. Then the Rebbe will know to stay away from this person also. And on the other hand, maybe the Rebbe will be able to have a good effect on this person where you weren't. The Eloi, and if not, if your Rebbe is not necessarily going to trust everything you say implicitly, loy lemalei, then don't tell him, because the fact is you're only one person, and then it's not lashon hara l'te'elus, then it's not accomplishing a constructive purpose, because anyway, the Rebbe is going to have to verify that with other people, so therefore don't say anything, and don't be guilty of lashon hara. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, Beis Hashem.